Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with actor Don Forsten, who's here in Sarasota, Florida, part of the ensemble company of the pretty new and very wonderful production of Hero at the Oslo Repertory Theater Company. Listen to Don talk about how he got captured by his career, and also talk about the creation of this unusual and delightful musical. So, hang on. Here comes the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive.
Life were like a comic, you'd read my thoughts out loud. They'd float above my head inside a stenciled bubble cloud. I wouldn't need to tell you what's gotten me so glum. Instead, I'll have to show you where I'm coming from. If life were like a comic, my dad would be the brain, a super comic genius with a kick-ass laser cane. I'd be the sly observer, which almost sounds as great as dude who still lives home with dad at 28. My corner of the world is boring, dull, and gray, so I improve it here in my journal every day. My fanboy flag unfurled, the irony is rife. I turn Milwaukee into my superhero life.
Hello and welcome to The Lynn Show. That, what you just heard, is a taste of the wonderful music from the wonderful musical Hero, which is now playing at the Oslo Repertory Theater in Sarasota, Florida. And The interview that I will be airing in just a little while is with Don Forsten, who plays the father in Hero, which was alluded to in this song. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are. And ironically, Hero is also about being who you really are. As a psychotherapist, I am confronted every day with people who quite often want to be what they already are, but are in denial for, are unable to access. Often, this happens in our childhood. Something about the way we are is not acceptable by our families. And so, sometimes with the most loving intention, they discourage this ability, this talent, this skill, this way of being. Schools, teachers can quite often discourage us. They can also encourage us, and I find that quite often in the interviews that I do, you'll hear, and I always make a point to comment on it, when a teacher says something which encourages a child, and so often that encouragement turns into a way of life, but it can go the other way as well. Siblings, peers, the culture itself, our religious institution, can find things about us that are not acceptable and discourage us. And so we come into adulthood without access to all that we really are. And as a therapist, I spend a lot of time trying to help people recover what they have been discouraged from, what they now are in denial for. Because I don't believe that these qualities, these abilities, these ways of being actually go away. They go what I call undercover. And then what we present to the world is a cover story. It is the truth about who we are, but not the whole truth. In Hero, something happens to the main character, not in his early childhood, but it is traumatic enough for him to create a cover story, which is not the whole truth about him. And of course, the show is about how he recovers himself and is able to be the hero of his own story, which is what I am hoping we all are able to do. So, not only do I talk about this idea, the idea that it is possible that you have had to deny something significant, something important, something essential about yourself, but I play interviews with people who make their living or their life with an art. Because when you listen to these people, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. We make it so difficult for people to make a life with an art in our culture that when people do it, it is who they really are. They cannot be other. And in this interview with Don Forsten, that's what you hear. He knew that he was an actor pretty much before he knew anything else. And he has held on to that. And you'll hear him talk about, especially towards the end of the interview, the significance of making this life his life and how he really didn't have another choice. And how, even though it is, and I hear this, of course, from everybody, not the most dependable of careers, it is where he has found his home. So I'm going to play his interview right now, but right before it, I'm going to play another taste from the musical Hero. This is Don singing as Hero's father. And I will also play a couple of more tastes later in the show. But here is Don Forsten singing from the musical Hero, followed by my interview with him.
I don't have muscles or brains galore like the man in the comics do. I had a dream though and built this store with my two hands and super glue. Adele had doubts, but she trusted me. Oh, maybe that's what my boy needs to let Hero dream his dream and plan his plan. He'll make his own mistakes. He'll find out what it takes to be a man.
I am here with Don Forsten because Don is here as part of an ensemble company in the production of Hero, which is currently running at the Oslo Repertory Theater, which I saw on opening night, which I really loved, and you were terrific.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, my goodness, you were so good.
Thank you.
So, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Okay.
And it's very clear that you make your living and your life.
That's right.
As an actor, a performer, a singer, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
How do you identify yourself?
Well, I as an actor.
As an actor.
Right. I do sing.
Yes, clearly.
And I've been an actor now for, my first paying job came in 1975, so almost 40 years now.
Okay, wait.
Okay.
Because I have a question.
Always a question about that. But I'm an actor. That's what I do. I do musical theater, but I do all kinds of theater. I do Shakespeare. I do television. I just was on Chicago PD. I had 4 episodes on Chicago PD.
Yay.
I do, like I said, musicals. I do Shakespeare. I do straight theater.
Okay, so I have the question I asked.
Sure.
And it is, do you remember, can you tell me, the very first moment in your life when it occurred to you that performing or acting out or getting attention mm-hmm. was attractive? Do you remember?
7 years old at the Madison School Summer Playground in West Allis, Wisconsin, which is just outside of Milwaukee, where I was raised. And I happened to be riding my bike past the playground, and I saw them. I went on the playground, and they were doing a play. They were putting a play together. And I said, the people at the playground.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked, I said, can I be in your play? And they said, sure. We're doing Green Eggs and Ham. And I was the Green Eggs and Green Eggs and Ham at the tender age of 7. That was 50 years ago.
Wow. Okay, so was there something before then that made you think you might want to be in a play, or that you'd seen a play, or that nothing?
No, not really. Well, I noticed that people were laughing a lot. When I was a little boy, I could tell, I could make people laugh.
Yes.
I could make my mom laugh, and I think all little boys can make their moms laugh. But I could make my mom laugh, I could make my family laugh.
Yes.
And I used to swing on the swing set outside my house, and the Beatles were brand new then, and I would sing at the top of my lungs. I would sing Beatles songs at the top of my lungs, and the people would listen to me.
Yes.
So
you were, even then, younger than 7.
Oh, yeah, I was, I would have been 5 and a half, 6.
Right.
Yeah.
So very, very young.
Very young.
You got that experience of getting attention
mm-hmm.
and getting positive attention.
Yes.
Right, that people liked it, they laughed,
sure.
they enjoyed it, right. And did you have a reputation? Do you know what I mean?
I do. I did. I was a class clown.
Yes.
Bless her heart, Mrs. Hager, my 4th grade teacher, I used to be a class clown in her class all the time, and she liked me.
Mm-hmm.
But she used to wag her finger at me, and she used to say, "Donald, never be a show-off and act in foolish ways. A show-off gets attention, but never any praise." And I always wanted to send her reviews of the shows, saying, "Hey, I'm showing off, and people are praising me."
Yes.
But she was sweetly.
What's really interesting about that is that didn't stop you.
No, not at all.
It doesn't even sound like it was a hiccup. It doesn't sound like you took it seriously.
I didn't. I think some people go their whole life without knowing what they want. I knew essentially where it is I wanted to go from a very young age. I was a child of television.
Mm-hmm.
I was a child of the movies. My brother and I would go to the movies every Saturday, every Sunday. You know, back then my dad would give us each a dollar and that would get us into the movie and get us popcorn. And we would go every Saturday and every Sunday, and I would just drink it all in. And
when did this start?
When I was, say, 5, 6, 7 years old.
Right, okay.
And we would just enjoy ourselves. I would watch those people on the screen, and I just would say, that's what I want to do.
Right.
That's where I want to be.
Right. So when you drove by the park and they were doing a play,
right.
It made perfect sense
perfect
that
sense
you would
to,
say...
to stop. And I remember getting home that day, and my mom said, where were you? And I said, I was just in a play. I was the Green Eggs and Green Eggs and Ham. It was actually a mistake because the Green Eggs costume was a green burlap sack, and it was about 95 degrees outside. And I realized pretty quickly that I had to be a little more choosy for my roles.
But you remember it.
Oh, yeah, like it was yesterday.
Like it was yesterday, right.
Sure do. Everybody laughing and...
Right, enjoying you.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
So this is more confirmation that that you have something that you can do that makes people laugh, that people like
yeah,
it, right?
Right, and move them, not just make them laugh.
Right.
And move them. I evidenced by this role here in Hero. Al does have some funny, Al, my character, has some funny things to say. He can get his laughs, but it's also a very serious role.
Yeah, it's a very serious role.
Right.
Yeah, and I want to get to Hero,
sure.
But so now we have you at 7,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have you in the 4th grade mm-hmm. already performing.
Right.
Right? Okay.
Right.
And at least hoping or imagining that you might have a life that had that in it.
Right.
Were there plays in elementary school, junior high
yeah,
school,
Yeah, there were
school?
the little school play type things, you know, the teachers would write, and you know, Timmy the Tooth, that sort of thing. And then I would be on every summer, you know, back in when I was growing up, all the playgrounds in the school district in my neighborhood, in the park district, had little summer playgrounds, and little summer programs. And they would all have summer plays. At the end of the season, we would put on some sort of play, and I was always in those. And then when I got to high school, junior high, I sang in choirs all the mm-hmm. time, all the choirs. High school, I was in 3 different choirs. We did a couple of plays. I got a music scholarship offer to a small college, Carroll College.
Okay, wait. You were in everything that you could be in.
Everything I could be in.
Right. And did you know even then that was what you wanted, or...
Yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't ever any...
There's really never been anything else I ever wanted to be.
Okay. All right, great.
Yeah.
So, did you apply for this music scholarship?
I did not. They I wasn't a very good student. But our choir was an excellent choir. And the professor, the head of the music department from this college just outside of Milwaukee, was friends with our choir director, and he came to watch us perform, and I had a solo. And he offered me this music scholarship. He interviewed me and offered me the scholarship and invited me to come out and sing with their choir. And I did a couple of times. And I didn't really care for the program. I didn't like it. And so I didn't take that. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I actually honestly thought I was going in the Army at that point.
And, you were what, 17, 18?
I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I wasn't a very good student. My brother was a master sergeant in the Army. And I was going to go in the Army with him, and then I had a chance to go to another, University of Wisconsin has what's called extension campuses, smaller schools. I guess people would call them junior colleges, just associate degree colleges. And one of them was just up not too far from this place that offered me the scholarship, and they had an excellent theater department and an excellent music department, and I went there. I was there for 2.5 years and got my first professional job offer. While I was in school, I went to some auditions, the Wisconsin theater auditions, where mostly summer theater programs from the schools, from the universities, would, a lot of the universities back then have a summer program where they tour the state like a little bus and truck sort of thing. And that's mostly who it was, but there were two or three professional companies in the middle of those auditions. And one of them offered me my first professional job in March of 1978. It was March 5th, 1978. I always remember that day.
Yeah.
And I was offered the chorus, in a chorus role in My Fair Lady in Rock Island, Illinois.
So you'd been auditioning, or this was...
This is my first audition.
Your first audition, I love it.
I went to my first audition, and I got, that day, I got about 13 offers, and none of them paid any money.
Yeah.
Barely, you know. One guy offered me a really nice role and for the whole summer and said, well, we'll pay you $200. And I said, oh my goodness, $200 a week. Never heard of that kind of money. He said, no, it's for the whole summer. He said, but we'll buy your beer for you. And I went, but this one was a real job offer, and I took it. I told my professors I was leaving, and they were fine with it. They understood. And I left school March 7th of 1978, and I never looked back.
Wow.
Yeah.
How amazing.
Yeah, never looked back. And since that time, I have done close to 300 shows.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about the trajectory of your career. I mean, this thing was a summer thing,
it was,
right?
Well, no, this was a regular professional theater. This wasn't a summer job. This was a regular professional theater that they just come to these auditions. And I went down there.
So are you saying you became part of the company?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't understand.
And I took the job there, and that show ran, boy, back in those days, they ran shows for a long time. It was, I think, a 19 or 20-week contract. And I did My Fair Lady. Fortunately for me, one of the guys in the cast, the guy who was playing Doolittle, Fred Applegate, who's a very, very successful actor himself, Fred's about 7 years older than me, became my mentor. He's a character man like myself.
Mm-hmm.
And he was my mentor. We were roommates, and he kind of shepherded me through my early years as to how to be an actor, how to comport myself.
So he was your graduate school?
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
And how lovely.
And he was a great guy, a great friend, who then went on out on his own, went up to Minneapolis, and was very successful with the Guthrie Theater. He's now going to be on Broadway in Sting's brand new musical, The Last Ship.
Wow.
And I just saw him again for the first time in almost 30 years. And he's, I've been really fortunate. And from there, I kind of kicked around non-union theater for about 5 years. Almost 7 years. Almost 10 years, actually. And then I got my first job offer in Chicago. First equity job offer in Chicago in 1987.
Wow.
And that was at the Marriott's Lincolnshire, where, coincidentally, we first premiered Hero 2 years ago. And I did, almost 60 shows at that theater.
Wow.
I like to go someplace and stay for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a wonderful life. I met my wife doing a show. We were doing a production of South Pacific. And everything happens fast for me with my career. And we were doing South Pacific together. We were in rehearsal. I knew her for a week. We went on our first date, and I asked her to marry me on our first date.
My goodness.
Yeah. I knew her for a week.
I was just going to say, a man who knows what he wants.
Yeah. She told me, she said, well, I think you're drunk. And I said, yeah, probably. It doesn't change anything, you know. And so we've been together for 31 years.
Wow.
I did a lot of musical theater, especially when I got to Chicago. That's kind of how I made my bones in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the last 10 years, I've started doing working at Chicago Shakespeare Theater a lot.
Well, it's really interesting because you didn't study.
I didn't, no.
So Shakespeare is usually something people studied.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So you're just a quick study.
Yeah, I guess. I've been fortunate. I've been blessed in that way. I make mistakes, but I kind of rely on my instinct. I've always thought of jump in with both feet.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to make a mistake, make a big one so it can be corrected. The small ones are the hard ones to correct. I've been really fortunate in that the people at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater have been very kind to me. The roles get a little better and better. In fact, when I leave here, I'm going to go back and do a summer tour of Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh.
With David Bell, who directed this show.
Really?
Who directed
Hero.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
I love that play.
Oh, I do too. I do too. It's a wonderful production of it.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. In Chicago.
In Chicago.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you want to talk about Hero?
Sure.
Tell me the history and...
Hero was written by Aaron Thielen and Michael Mahler. Michael wrote the music. Aaron wrote the book. Aaron is also from Milwaukee. And he happened to be in... there's a section of Milwaukee, I believe it's called the Old Third Ward. East side of Milwaukee, actually. It's not the Third Ward, it's east side of Milwaukee. And Aaron was a comic book guy. He loved comic books. And he happened to be going past this section, this particular section, the east side of Milwaukee, is where I was born, is very old world looking. And he found this antique store that was this beautiful old building. And as he looked out the back door, he saw that there was a yard with a sidewalk that went to a house. And the people who ran the antique store lived in the house behind it. And he thought this would be a great setting for a comic book shop. Comic book shop, Milwaukee, and he put that together. And then he sat down and started to write Hero. And at first, it was a very, very different play. I did one of the very early readings of it. It was a very different play than what it is now, like most plays are. Mm-hmm. It goes through a genesis. And
he was a playwright?
No, he was an actor. He had written a few plays, but he hadn't made his career as a playwright. He wrote a musical of For the Boys, that James Caan, Bette Midler movie.
Mm-hmm.
He'd written a musical of that, and I think he had dabbled in children's theater, if I'm not mistaken. But they asked me to do the first reading of Hero, and I did that.
Can you tell a little bit about what that was like?
Sure, it was very different. It was the same basic story, Hero living with his father. Hero Batowski lives with his father and works for his father in the comic book shop. And he's 28 years old, and he kind of shelters himself in this comic book shop. There was a family tragedy 10 years earlier that he has never been able to shake, never been able to stop blaming himself for. And like most of those things, he's really not to blame for these things. But he lives with his father, and his father is kind of doing the thing of, you need to get out in the world, but I don't want you to leave me.
Right, yeah.
And there's a little tension like there is between fathers and sons. And then Hero's old girlfriend from 10 years ago shows up and shakes his life up in that way. And it's basically that story. And the early versions of it had Hero, it was a little bit darker than it is now. It's not to say that it's dark now, but it was actually quite a bit darker. There was actually a character in it that Hero would talk to, this woman that would come into the shop all the time, and she would talk to Hero about his things, and then about his life, and about how the comic books that he was writing. I should say that Hero keeps a journal of his life in the form of a comic book. He has a big pile of journals, and they're very precious to him. And this woman would discuss it, and then we later find out that the woman is just in his imagination,
uh-huh.
that she's not really there. Well, that character went by the side of the road. And then Michael Mahler came into the picture and started writing music for it.
Yeah.
And Michael Mahler is an absolute genius. Some
the
of the
music
most beautiful music I've ever heard in my life and ever got the chance to sing. And then my involvement with it kind of, I thought, was going to end at that reading. Because that's what happens. People do a reading and then they go, thanks a lot. And you don't hear about another reading if you do for a while. They invited me to two other ones I was unable to because of prior commitments. And then I was asked to come and participate in a project at Northwestern University called the American Musical Theater Project, where they take new works and they put them together and they kind of on a bare bones and they either do a reading of it or a staged reading of it. And this particular one was Hero.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that one 3 years ago.
And now, now it's more or less this form.
It's pretty much what you see on the stage here at the Oslo. It's very close to what it is now. And we did, then the Marriott produced it in 2012. And then it ended here. It ended up there. You know, didn't know what was going to happen. As an actor, when the show's over, you say, thanks a lot, see
right,
you later.
Right, right.
See you down the road. And then I got a call to come down here to do it when it moved down here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to...
To do it.
To stop doing what I was doing up in Chicago and came up here, came down here, I should say. And the play now, I think there are new things in the play. It's the same story.
Right.
As it was in Chicago. Now it's just, there are more, my character, Al, has more to do.
Mm. He's very important.
Thank you. And yes, he is. And the two characters in the comic book shop, Kyle and Ted, the two guys that are there all the time, have a lot more to do.
Right, comic relief.
Comic relief, and the everybody's role has been fleshed out a little bit more. I will tell you, in over 300 shows and close to 40 years in this business, I told Aaron this also, this is without question the best role I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also one of the two or three best shows I've ever been in.
I believe it. Yeah. I believe it absolutely. We had such a wonderful time.
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting reaction, Lynn. When I was in Chicago, I had done over 60 shows at this particular
mm-hmm.
theater. I'd heard, you know, the audiences knew who I was.
Right.
And they would come up and talk to me. Boy, this is great. This is fun. We love seeing you. After this show, when we did Hero up there, I would be walking in the parking lot or out in the lobby, and I would have grown men my age in their 50s, obviously fathers, coming up to me and talking and shaking my hand, and they were shaking with tears rolling down their face because this relationship between Hero and Al, I don't want to make it sound like it's the Hero and Al show. It's not. But the relationship, from my perspective, is I'm a father of three myself. Three boys, and it is the way fathers and sons relate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron and Michael absolutely captured that perfectly. It's the way they talk, and it means a lot. It's the whole thing of pushing your child out of the nest.
holding one hand out and one hand holding back.
As my mother
right.
used to say, it's the get away closer
moment.
Right.
Right.
And it's... It just seems to move people. And it's interesting because I had people come up to me on opening night here. I had a couple come up to me, again, highly emotional, and said to me, you know, if you remember on opening day, we had that huge rainstorm.
Yes.
And it was hot. And they're going, oh, it's hot, it's raining, we have to go see this show tonight. It's called Hero,
comic books.
And she said, it's the most amazing piece I've ever seen. Yeah. And I had people coming up to at the Marriott saying, of all the show, we've been subscribers here for 25 years. This is the best show we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And there is just, my friend Ian, who plays one of the comic book guys, said to me, you know what it is? It's what makes it, what sets it apart from most musical theater is its frankness. Its dialogue is the way people talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way people talk.
Yeah.
I told Matt Mueller, who plays Kirk, crazy cousin Kirk in this,
he's wonderful.
He is.
Oh my God, he's wonderful.
And I told him, I said, you know, the best thing I can tell you is I was born and raised in Milwaukee. Spent my first 20 years of my life in Milwaukee. And I said, and you are about just about every guy I grew up with, including myself.
Yeah.
That's the way we were.
Yeah.
It's about working. All the people in the show are working class.
Right.
There isn't a lot of, you know, this isn't a rich person, a story about rich people or anything. It's a story about real people.
Yeah.
And it's told in a very genuine, real way.
And everyone in it is wonderful.
Right.
Everyone in it is wonderful. Nate? Nat?
Yes, Nate.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Owen Teague from
Yeah,
Tampa.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
They're all wonderful.
Yeah.
They're all wonderful.
He's
and I, too, cried. I mean, I'm not a father, but I cried and cried.
I have a little tip for you. I cry after my last exit.
Yeah.
I get off stage and cry.
I believe you.
It's very emotional.
It's very emotional.
Right.
Because it's very real.
Right.
Because it's the truth, so it
And captures. we had to stress that a lot. David Bell, our director, who is a wizard, made sure, you know, I would say things in rehearsal over these last couple of years, because David directed in Chicago also, would say things, well, boy, this is really funny. We could really get a nice laugh here. And he would say, yeah, well, we'll find the laugh, but I don't mind the laughs, but the laughs have to come from a real place.
Right.
And they all do.
Yes, they do.
They don't, it's not a, nothing wrong with musicals. I've made my life doing musicals, but it's not the old 1-2-3 joke.
Yeah, right,
joke.
Right.
It's, they're All the laughs are very genuine, yeah, very real.
No, it's organic. There's no question about
right.
it. Right.
And it spans the years, too. I mean, we have, here, you know what, at Oslo, we have a large senior citizen contingent.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They adore it.
Oh, yes.
They love it.
Yeah.
Because they can remember what it was like,
yeah,
and they
right.
and they understand it. It's everybody. I don't think anybody doesn't understand it.
No. It's even if you haven't lived something like this, the reality of it is so poignant
right.
that it touches you. It can't help but touch you.
Right. Well, like you said, you just mentioned before. You said, "Well, I'm not a father." I said, "Well, but you grew up in a family."
Absolutely, I did.
It's all families talk too.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Right.
And even when it's outrageous, like Kirk is,
yeah.
It's so compelling, you
right.
know?
But I think people knew people like Kirk.
Well.
Everybody knew somebody like Kirk.
Yes, I guess that's right.
Everybody knew somebody like him.
I guess that's right.
Everybody knew somebody like that guy.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful experience, a life-changing experience for me.
Yeah, I believe you. Do you have any idea are there plans?
They're talking about plans. I don't know what they are. They don't really tell us.
No.
And to be frank, as an actor, you don't really concern yourself with
No, this. No, clearly not.
Every actor, even when you're offered a job, you say,
yeah, we'll
thank
see.
You. Thank you very much. When I'm here rehearsing it and see my first paycheck,
yes, I got it. Right.
That's the life I chose. In fact, I mean, for example, right before I left Chicago, I had been offered, production of Mary Poppins outside of Chicago for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got you booked, right? And I went, you bet.
yeah, right.
It's 7 months from
that's
now.
Right.
You know?
That's right. That's right.
I don't know anything about that. It's
right.
7 months from now.
Right.
A lot happens in an actor's life in 7 months.
Yeah, right. Well, and the other question that I ask mm-hmm. is, having given an entire life to this work, which you really have, mm-hmm. What would you say about what it's like to have lived this life?
You know, well, it's a cliche to say it's a roller coaster, but it is. I don't know any other life. I've been in the outside world, as we refer to it,
mm-hmm.
in the real world, as actors refer to it, and I enjoyed myself. I worked with everybody, but the most fascinating thing about being an actor, in my experience, has been, there's an old saying in the acting community. There's 100 people in this business, and we all know each other. And what that means is, even if we don't know each other, we know somebody, we each have a mutual acquaintance,
right.
but we've been through the same common experiences. There's a shared history amongst us.
Right.
And it's very comforting. And in the outside world, I didn't have that with those people. I got along with everybody, but there wasn't a shared history.
Right.
I've dedicated my life to this. I will tell you, it is a life that people pursue, but I like to think that it's a life that finds you. This life found me. I get emotional about it. I'm sorry. It chose me, and it allowed me to thrive in this business. People ask me, are you a successful actor? And in their minds, I think they're thinking about people like Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, and that kind of successful. I say, well, no, you know what? I'm not that successful actor. I'm successful in the respect that I've never stopped working, and my wife and I have been able to raise 3 boys and buy a home. Mm-hmm. And I've been so blessed in the almost 40 years I've never gone more than a month without knowing where my next job was coming
my
from.
My goodness.
I've always had a job. I've always worked in the business. I don't know another business. And frankly, even if I did, I don't think I would choose it. Once you're in this business, it is all-consuming. It is your life. And it's the best life that I can imagine. My son wanted to do it, and then he decided not to. I tell young actors when I talk to them, I say to them all the time, I say, why do you want to be an actor? Well, I want to be famous. I want to be rich. So, well, then it's not the right business.
No.
Because you won't be.
No.
But, on the same breath, I don't know any other business where legally you can become rich and famous overnight. which happens.
Yes.
Years ago, up at the Marriott Lincolnshire, I worked with a 15-year-old girl who had no concept as to how to act. Mm-hmm. None. Had no idea she had to be told how to walk on the stage. She had this glorious singing voice. We were doing a production of Big River, the Huck Finn musical. And she had this glorious voice. But she would stop singing, and then she'd just stare out in the audience and look around. And she had to be told, no, you have to stay in the scene. And she was a very kind, polite, very well-behaved young girl. And that was it. You know, you're thinking, well, see, not everybody knows how to do it. And then about 6-7 years later, I was watching the Academy Awards, and this young girl walked up and got an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor in Dreamgirls. It was Jennifer Hudson. You know, so you're like, you never know. I mean, like, oh, bang, overnight, right. That can happen to
That's
you.
That's right.
Not that you're going to get an Oscar, but the only thing I can tell people about this business is if you are going to choose it, if you are going to go into it, be ready to hear no, because you're going to hear it a lot. Mm-hmm. Have a short memory. mistakes happen. Just get over it, get past it, move on. I mentioned I was working a production of Midsummer Night's Dream with a lot of very young actors who were just starting out. And a couple of them asked me, what's the best advice you can give? And I think they're all expecting study, go to school, study. And right. My best one is be nice to people. Be nice in this business. Be nice. Because if you're not, people will find out very fast. And you'll work a lot of places one time. And you work with a lot of people once. And everybody knows everybody. There's 100 people, and we all know each other.
That's right.
And if you're nice...
That gets around.
Yeah, they will look at you and go, this guy's got a great voice, this guy's got a great voice, this one's not very nice, this one is. We'll take the nice one.
Right.
And that's what happens. That's my only thing that I can really say about the business. Just the fact that I guess I'm an example of what it can do for you. I mean, I've been doing it for 40 years.
Uh-huh.
And I've met the most fascinating people. I've had ultimate highs, ultimate lows. I've been in some great shows. I've been in shows that I have been some of the worst shows I've ever been in my life, and wanted to stop the show at a few points and say, I'm really sorry about this, folks. It's almost over. Just stick with us. It's almost over. I've had so many great opportunities given to me, and I just think it's been a great life for me.
Yeah.
It's been a wonderful life for me. I mean, here I am. 4 weeks ago, I was in Chicago doing Midsummer Night's Dream. My show was about to close, and the next thing, I get a phone call, and 2 days later, I'm in Sarasota, Florida,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doing my favorite show in the world.
Yeah.
So.
I just wonder. You said it chose you, it found you.
Yeah.
What did you mean? Do you mind?
No, I don't. I think it's this career more than any, I think, from my limited experience of what other people's careers are like. I think this is one that gets in your blood. We've all heard the thing about being bit by the theatrical bug. A lot of people like doing plays in high school and things like that, but then they grow up. They, I have friends that were in plays with me in high school, and now they're dentists and doctors right. and lawyers.
Right.
And they all have a great life, and they have Saturday and Sundays free. This got into my blood, and my father passed away when I was 11 years old.
Oh, dear.
And I believe he's been my angel my life. And he told me this is what I was going to do. He told me. When I was a little boy, I would make him laugh, and he always told me, you're going to be a show boy someday. You're going to be a show guy someday. And I remember telling my mother when I was 5 years old, watching Wizard of Oz for the very first time, and the lion made me laugh. And she said, you like him? And I said, I do. And I said, someday I'm going to be the lion.
Wow.
And then the year after my mother passed away, I got cast in The Wizard of Oz as the lion in a great production of The Wizard of Oz. And it was one of the kindest notes I ever got. My director wrote me a note and said, you're terrific in this, and your mother would be very proud of you. And that's what I mean when I say it chose me.
I got it.
I had no other life. I was done. I was done. I was toast. From the minute I put that green burlap bag on Madison Playground, I was done. It was who I was going to be. I was going to be an actor.
That's a great place to stop.
Thank you
so much.
Dawn believes that this career chose him. The bug bit him. It got into his blood. From the time he put on that burlap costume as Green Eggs at 7 years old, he was toast. Of course, his family saw this in him so young, his father telling him he was a showboy, his mother listening to him talk about wanting to be the lion in The Wizard of Oz, and not saying, oh, don't be silly, but allowing that to be. A boy who made his parents and his friends and his teachers and his classmates laugh from the very, very beginning. From the very, very beginning, Dawn Forsten knew what he was, who he was, and no one told him no, except that one teacher, who apparently was fighting the river. Because even though she said that silly poem to him, it didn't touch him. Because he was so sure, everything else in his life confirmed for him that who he thought he was, that what he thought he was, that what he wanted to do was right. And obviously that was the truth, because it's been 50 years since that burlap bag and Green Eggs and Ham, and he can still talk about this work with tears in his eyes. He can still get emotional over the gift of this work that found him, that embraced him. When he talks about the fact that there are 100 people in the business and they all know each other, what I think he's really talking about is the fellowship, the camaraderie, the companionship, the feeling of being in something with other people. You know them, you don't know them, you know them well, you don't know them well. Still, there's a bond. I hear people talk about this quite often. Actors talk about this particularly. Youngsters not feeling attached, feeling isolated, and then getting into the drama group and feeling that they have found themselves a home, found themselves a place where they fit. So, of course, I always play these interviews in the hope that as you are listening, you are asking yourself, am I at home in my life? Is the life that I have chosen for myself the life that fits me? When I talk about how I live, how I make my living, what I do with my life, do I tear up out of joy and satisfaction and pleasure and delight and gratitude? You know, Dawn was apologizing for being emotional, but I think it is the highest accolade to his commitment to be who he is. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about this, but before I do, I want to play one more little taste of Dawn Forsten singing in Hero. This is Time Flies By.
Look at our boy, look at him beam. Look at that girl, adore him. Just like we were, caught in a dream. Finally it's happening for him. Time to let go, time to move on. Time to try senior dating. Dearest Adele, you're never gone, but a new life is waiting.
Time flies by.
So when you listen to Dawn sing, and when you see him on stage, you can hear why he's working as much as he is. This show is about becoming who you really are. It's about overcoming the obstacles which life may have put in your path that stop you from being your whole you. In that way, Hero is the poster child for the Lin Show, because it makes the point that because something like that interrupted your development into the expression of your whole self, it's not too late to heal that wound and be all that you are. So I hope that you will all come out and see Hero, not just because it's the poster child for the Lin Show, but because it's so good. It's funny, it's teary, it's, as you can tell from the music, it's got an incredible score. It's got amazing performers. Every single one of them is terrific. I'm sorry that I didn't get an opportunity to interview every single one of them, just so that I could tell them how good they were, because they really are. So again, come out and see Hero at the Oslo Repertory Theater Company. And if you want to talk to me about this idea of overcoming the obstacles of your past, of healing the wounds that may have been inflicted through no fault of your own and have gotten between you and the full expression of yourself, you can find me at my website. That is thelynshow.com. THELYNNE. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. You'll get a different The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show, THELYNNESHOW. At my website, you can listen to all of the past shows. They're all up there in podcast, obviously, including this one. You can get a copy of my book. I wrote a book called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. You can learn about psychotherapy on the telephone. I wrote an article called Psychotherapy on the Go. You can get me to come and talk to your group or organization about overcoming the obstacles of the past and becoming all that you really are. Well, all right. We're closing in on the end of this show, and I wanted to leave time to play two more little tastes from the score of Hero. These are sung by Hero and his girlfriend, so that would be Brian Sears and Laurie Veldheer. I'm really sorry that I didn't get an opportunity to play music by everybody in the cast, because they are not only amazing actors, they're terrific singers. But this is what I got. So here is That's My Kryptonite, and There's Wonder All Around.
The way you love the sound of jet planes as they go roaring by. The way you're scared to death of falling, but not afraid to fly. You order food just like a frat boy and offer me a bite. Oh, that's my kryptonite. Now I may never know quite why some girl and some guy should seem to be in tune. Still, if you're what makes me ill and they prescribe some pill, forget about it, I don't wanna be immune.
The way your pencil meets the paper, just like a lover's touch. The way your friendships and your family so clearly mean so much. The way when we can steal a second, you hold my hand so tight. Oh, that's my kryptonite.
There is wonder all around. There is wonder all around.
As always, I hope that you got something that you can use from this show, something that you enjoyed, something that you learned that you didn't know, something that inspired you, something that triggered something for you about your own life, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. That I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go. From the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So